Welcome to Design Oracles. We are here to pontificate, evangelize, and educate you on residential interior design and architecture.
I'm Amity Worrell, interior designer of Amity Worrell & Company.
And I'm Diane Kett, architect of DK Studio, and together partners at Amity Kett. This podcast session, we are going to talk about historic houses with modern trends.
Yes. So
one of our passions.
Yes. We both love this subject. This is something that we both feel really strongly about. So I'll just do the 30,000 foot view here. But basically, I love working in historic homes. Diane does as well. Vintage homes, homes that have their own character and personality from the period that they were built in. But a lot of times, those houses don't function for families that live a contemporary lifestyle.
Right. Yeah, they have teeny tiny closets. They don't have a laundry room. They might not have much of a kitchen because the kitchen used to be outside.
Yeah, I always tell clients when we're looking for inspiration for their 1920s home or earlier, not to look for 1920s kitchens because they were not very nice. Or if it's the 1870s, sometimes they weren't even attached to the house. So kind of thinking through, really, how do you make a space that is older function for a contemporary family without losing the spirit of the original house?
Well, you know, you really want to celebrate the history of the house. And then I feel like, again, you know, there's that emotional connection to the history. And usually the people who have these houses buy them because of a love of the history and the historic fabric of it, you know, because they know it's not going to be easy. It's going to be hard. There's secrets that come out in the walls as we start to open them. And, you know, it's just it's a labor of love.
Yeah. These are not people that have gone into this not understanding what they're going to do. It's not for the faint of heart to redo a historic home, because a lot of times it has to be more thoughtfully and slowly done. There's a different level of builder and craftsman that you want working on those properties.
Yes. We have one builder in San Antonio that just loves to do old houses and gets just really pumped up and excited, and it's really fun to work with him.
You want someone who has an understanding of construction science and a little bit of knowledge, at least the experience in the field of working in what the construction is from those original homes, because they can be built of entirely different materials. We horsehair and
We discover solid concrete beams in houses, which you never see today. What else did we found? Like these clay tile, almost CMU-like walls, then had concrete poured in them. So really solid construction. That's why they're still standing, really hard to move those walls around.
Yeah. And then, of course, the beautiful windows are maybe not to code. Sometimes, right. Depending on where you are. And so they need tempered glass. You need to change the windows for that reason. And then finding a window that matches the original windows in the house can be a challenge. So sometimes we have to make the windows. So that's not for everybody. But it's very satisfying feeling to make a house comfortable for a family, a contemporary family. And I think one of the first places we think about how to make that work is in kitchens, because the way that we live these days is more connected to the rest of the house, whereas kitchens in those properties tend to be more closed off. So finding a way to partially open up those spaces is good, but also, and Diane and I worked on a property where we did this really well, instead of opening up the kitchen to the entire house, making the kitchen comfortable enough that an entire family can be in the kitchen area itself and treat it like a mini family room. I think that's good.
Yeah, I think that's usually what we end up doing, because you kind of want to keep the integrity of the house with keeping the room separate. But yeah, we're usually able to find ways to kind of make that kitchen bigger. Maybe we create an island or a bar or some type of a seating area that's just outside the periphery of the main cooking area.
Yeah. And then, as you know, on the decorating side, it's about putting upholstered furniture in there, make, you know, a bench feel like a sofa, putting some swivel chairs in, something that is upholstered and comfortable that maybe even a little spot to watch television or hang out within those spaces so you don't have to blow out the walls and have everything connected mm-hmm. and sort of celebrate the smaller spaces.
Yeah. And they usually have great light anyway because they have great windows. So. True. Mm-hmm. And so that's another thing is trying to work in more storage. So trying to get a good pantry in there, cabinets, because there's usually, again, there's so many great windows. There's not as much room for cabinets, but trying to be really creative and efficient with our storage.
Yes, efficiency. And then adding bathrooms. There's typically a lot of these older houses only had one bathroom. Sometimes on the second floor or just the first floor, and you had to go up or downstairs to get to them. So making sure that there's maybe a powder room would have been less common, but
Or sometimes they're teeny tiny ones tucked under the stairs.
Mm-hmm. Which is fine. Typically people who like to live in these historic homes don't want a big suburban bathroom, so they can embrace a little smaller space. But also I think a big part of it is figuring out what the finishes will be. Whether it's a handmade tile or something that harkens back to another age or something that's Art Deco or something that can arts and crafts or craftsman style, some in the materials themselves, even if the proportions of the room, the master bathroom or the kitchen or the powder room become a little larger and more contemporary in scale, if you juxtapose that with materials that feel of the period, it can still feel integrated.
Yeah, so there's one house we worked on, and it still had in beautiful condition the concrete tile floors, which have become more popular in the last, 10 or 15 years. Mm-hmm. So these had been there laid originally with the house in the 1920s, and they were in great condition. And so we had connected an old door opening from the kitchen to there, and so we were able to play off of that color of the floor in the kitchen with that tile.
Yeah.
So it was definitely similar. I mean, we weren't copying it, but it was.
Yeah, you know. I think that's the way to do it with a light hand, is sort of take your cues from what you discover mm-hmm. in the process. There were a couple in the same property that Diane's talking about. There were some rosette carvings that, on some of the doors that were original had been there in the trim work around the doors, but it wasn't in every door. And so we were able to find someone to actually recreate those for us, copy them, and make them work. So it's just, it's a labor of love. It's more thoughtful, and it can be done comfortably. Speaking of comfort, though, a lot of these houses did not have heating and air conditioning in them.
Yeah, that's always a...
So the struggle is, where do we put it?
That's always a big challenge. Mm-hmm. I mean, luckily there's the mini split that has come about, which helps because you can fit it in tinier spaces, so you can kind of get them into a ceiling. It's a cassette style, which is really short. It's only about 10 or 12 inches tall, and you can have a small amount of ducting off of that too. So sometimes we use that a lot instead of trying to get in your typical air handling system.
Because the air handling systems can take up a lot of space, and you have to drop ceilings, and you lose ceiling height, or you have strange venting moments in the wrong spot in properties. Mm-hmm. I have worked in some historic properties in other places, like down in the Bahamas, where because the architecture felt so special and historic, and it was a vacation home, and people were only there during good weather, we've made the decision not to put HVAC in at all, except maybe in one guest bedroom, and do like a cassette type HVAC system, so that on really, really hot days, someone can just sleep in a different room, but kind of celebrate the architecture of the space by not upgrading it. So some of that is just decisions you make about where your priorities lie, whether it's being a good steward of the property and keeping it in original condition, if you have the luxury to do that, or sacrificing. I feel like in Europe, they use those little mini splits. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. It was slow to come over to the U.S. But yeah. So there is one house we worked on that was just gorgeous, and it was really pretty large. And it was for one of the vice presidents of a university, and they entertained there a lot for, I guess, visiting professors or fundraising, and it had a really great, glorious dining room, great living room, great entry hall foyer that went out to a fabulous back porch. But there was a family that lived there with two young kids. And so a lot of times in those old houses, some of all those various porches have been enclosed with usually just windows filled in. And so usually we kind of take those spaces and create, like we created a little TV living family space off of one of those big entertaining living rooms. So then the kids could be, or the family could be in there watching TV. We used part of the porches upstairs to make the bigger master bath so we could get a bigger shower and a tub and two vanities in.
Yeah, sort of stealing space from what used to be a screen porch or a sleeping porch, mm-hmm. and using those spaces that didn't really have a current use for the larger closet.
Made a really great large closet in mm-hmm. one of them.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes to not have to, again, blow out walls and make the spaces feel too open plan, which is very, very popular now, keeping the kitchen separate, you know, as areas that used to only have maybe staff working in them or servants or something for these old houses. And instead of taking down the walls and making it open, we created in this particular property a little sitting area that also kind of was connected to a location at the island for people to sit. So there's still eat-in kitchen moment and a mudroom off of that space. So a family could use it as a hangout mm-hmm. opportunity. And a kitchenette upstairs to kind of spread out that additional, maybe that's where the cereal for the kids is the little kitchenette upstairs.
Yeah, that was like a weird closet or something. So we created a little kitchenette so the babysitter could be helping with meals with the kids upstairs while all the entertaining was going on downstairs.
Yeah, so I think we really approach things with an eye to making them function, yes, but not killing the character and not getting rid of all of the history there.
And we took part of an old closet, I think, that went to that master bedroom. And that was what we used to create this little office. And it had a window in it. It was probably, 5 feet by 9 feet?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Small.
And did a built-in desk and some built-in shelves and file drawers. And there was a window in there. And he could just kind of close the door, sit in there and do his thing and not be disturbed.
Yeah. So we didn't have to give up one of the precious bedrooms for mm-hmm. an office. We could just carve it out of some closet space, which was a big success.
Yeah.
I think that the way to kind of think about how to keep a historic home kind of feeling right and connected to its history is with the facade. And, you know, there's a lot of rules that communities have regarding what kind of changes. If you're working an actual historic property that has historic significance, sometimes you will have to get sign off from the commission, the historic commission, on what work you get to do in that house. But usually it's the exterior. Is that right, Diane?
Yeah. So there's also historic districts. And so you have to go through the historic commission, board, committee, whatever they're called in that area. You have to go through and get their permission if you want to change anything on the facade. They usually don't say anything about the inside.
Yeah. They don't seem to care as much as we do about the inside. That's true.
Yeah. So, yeah, and sometimes people have historic markers, and there's different types of historic markers you can get. So it often helps you with taxes as well.
That's true. So, yeah, I think it's marrying like the construction types for the new and old, just as we, you know, in another podcast, we were talking about additions. And so sometimes when you work with a historic property and maybe you're adding on to it, you're going to want to mimic the construction methods of the original property as much as possible while still upgrading all of the systems. Getting that HVAC in there is important, making sure the plumbing's been addressed. And then sometimes ceiling heights come into play, like we were saying, bring in the HVAC. But I've seen, and I don't know how Diane feels about this, but in a lot of mid-century homes, the ceilings are lower. That was a thing in mid-century homes.
True, right.
And, you know, it's a struggle because it's not popular right now to have a lower ceiling. When I say lower, I mean 8 feet. But a lot of people really want those vaulted ceilings. And to me, you know, how and I'm just curious too, Diane, how you feel about it, but how much do you preserve those types of things like a lower ceiling versus maybe do you pick and choose and maybe you make the ceiling taller in the master bedroom or in
Well, sometimes area? With the mid-century houses, you've got a vaulted room usually.
It's true.
With like a gable roof and it's all open and then you move into other areas with the lower ceilings. Mm-hmm. And I usually don't like to change that because it's the feeling of going from the taller spaces to the lower spaces and the feel you have as you move about from room to room, the sequence of order of rooms. So
that was the answer I was hoping you were going to give because I love that hierarchy of space and I live in a mid-century house and the front room that you enter into if you're a guest has a lower ceiling. And then the den that pops up or family room pops up into a higher ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And the bedrooms have lower ceilings. And, you know, I've done a lot of reading about why that was. And a lot of it was about sound control, too. Mm-hmm. And those ceilings are absorbent. So understanding the architecture and why things were built the way they were built is very interesting. And knowing why things were built the way they were built can sometimes help you kind of be more at peace with the space that you have and not feel like you have to reinvent every single room. Would you agree with that, Diane, or why?
Yes, yeah. I agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because, you know, we feel strongly, I do especially, that the interior be somewhat preserved without being completely gutted. And Diane's preserving the architecture and making sure the systems don't intrude on the way that the house feels.
Right. And a lot of those historic homes, going back to talking about with committees, you can't change the outside. So sometimes when we're like in that porch that's all glass and we put a bathroom in there.
Yes.
So we can't change the glass. So we have to kind of really work with the layout of the space in order to get that privacy. And then also there's window coverings. And then also same thing with the porch. When we make it a closet, it's definitely window coverings really helps us with that. That can help with the heat and privacy and light and everything.
Yeah, if you haven't changed the windows, there are definitely window treatments that you can use that help make the space more functional for
and
people.
And then sometimes, you know, it's got a lower sill and we might be wanting to put a cabinet in front of it. And so we've kind of come up with this design where we drop the cabinet and that aligns with the sill of the window, but we still run the countertop across and it just runs, you know, in front of the window. And so you can still see through the window, but it's all integrated. Yeah, so we're still keeping the integrity.
There's a lot of little tricks like that that you can. Also, I think all of us have seen those old bathrooms. You go into an older house and there's the completely specialty tiled walls with the pink and then with a deco tile running through. Maybe it's got a line of black and then the floors have kind of a mauve and the toilet and the sink all match. And you know, I always tell people to recreate that now would break the bank to get a bathroom that is that tiled.
Yeah.
So it breaks my heart to tear it out. But sometimes it's just not people's taste and they want it redone. So if we have the opportunity when we're going back in with materials, trying to at least have a nod to the spirit of the original space. Maybe it's a pale pink tile, or maybe it's making sure that it's not an all glass shower enclosure, that a part of it is sort of a pony wall with the tile wrapping so that that material can be more in keeping with what would have originally been there, but still have the upgrade. So there are little tricks like that you can do where when someone comes into your home, they can see that it's been thoughtfully done and in keeping with the original, but also upgraded.
Mm-hmm. I always feel like the laundry room is one of the hardest
in
those houses because they really didn't have a laundry room.
What did they like? Go to the river and pound it on rocks?
I guess they're outside.
It's true. Uncivilized. A lot of times it was in some of the houses in the 1920s houses, it was on the screen porch.
They had somebody come pick it up and do it for them and bring it back.
Yeah, laundry rooms are tricky because you need to get a lot of function out of your laundry room these days. I would say if there was one area I would ignore convention, it would be a laundry room and just say, bust it out, make a nice big laundry room.
Yeah, but we have to usually kind of carve a space out for it. So we just recently finished another really great 1920s house and had to find a nice laundry room. And we had a lot of special requirements for the laundry room we had to meet with the airing.
Oh, yes.
Closet mm-hmm. and an ironing board and did not want stackable washer and dryer, definitely side by side. And
yes. So yes, it's so funny. The way that people cook and the way that they wash their clothes is so unique to them.
Mm-hmm.
We've had clients that want three washer dryers, one in, you know, one in their kids' closets, one in their closet, and one in the, you know, or they like to do laundry three times a day, or they like to drip dry everything. And so it's true. You kind of have to be creative.
Yeah, we do have a lot of long conversations about laundry rooms.
Mm-hmm.
So we also have, you know, like where to put the cat box, and we've designed cabinets for them and
yes.
even have little vent fans in there. So
yes.
Extract kitty odor.
In fact, we're designing now a cat cabinet. That's what we're calling it, the cat cabinet for a cat. And then we have to have a discussion with the client about how their cat likes to enter the box,
mm-hmm.
whether they're a top entry cat.
Yep.
What type of litter box do they have? But you know, these things, they're what you live with every day. And so it really matters in getting that right. It sounds small, but it makes a huge impact on your daily life.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, laundry rooms are big. So I think we kind of covered everything on the historic
yep.
houses and how to bring them up to date and more modern and easier to live in.
Yep, for contemporary families, but still keeping the architecture with a nod to the original. We've got a few more listener questions here we're going to take.
Yeah, questions for the Oracle.
Questions for the Oracle.
Here's a good one. My spouse and I have different design styles. How do we blend contrasting styles to create a cohesive space?
Yeah, I actually had this conversation today,
too. That kind of happens often.
Yeah, I had that today. a client has a table and a rug that are very, very significant and important to her, and the husband doesn't get how they're going to fit in the existing house. And I don't know yet because I haven't seen it, but definitely comes up often. And a lot of times, at least what I have experienced, I don't know if Diane will feel the same, but one person in the pairing, in the group, in the couple, or whatever it is a purist and wants everything, all of the, at least the furnishings and the finishes to be extremely aligned with whatever the style of the architecture of the home is going to be or is. And the other person in the pairing is maybe more sentimental and likes a mix and has some pieces from family. And it's a delicate balance. You've got to kind of marry those two and balance it with, you know, I told this client this morning, they said, I feel confident that we can find a way to make your table, this one particular dining table, work in your mid-century house and balance it in some way that, you know, your partner's going to be comfortable and happy with. So,
yeah. So for me, it's often the exterior style. And so the most common is someone who likes traditional married to someone who likes modern. So I get that a lot. And so I feel like we're pretty successful at coming up with a good design. We usually do it through, it's the use of materials on the outside, kind of the shapes of the roof lines, and then, of course, the proportion of the windows and if they have divided lights or no divided lights. So that is often how we kind of try to marry the modern and traditional.
Yeah, so. I think for us, we think, I was already thinking about for this client, telling her that, you know, what we can do is the pieces of hers that feel very specific and difficult to feel comfortable for her partner, we can figure out what it is that he's looking for the overall space to feel like, and then just balance it that way. So say it's a very ornate and decorative area rug, which one of them is, it's a Turkish area rug. Maybe in that space, we do very low streamlined sofas that are very contemporary and quiet. And then the lighting is also contemporary and quiet. Maybe we kick it back up with the art and go a little more traditional there and just hitting that balance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe if we're doing some built-ins in that room, we can do those built-ins. We could do the furnishings a little more traditional, but do the built-ins in a very contemporary or, in this case, mid-century way to kind of balance that for both parties. it's just a little bit of a give and take. You don't want to end up with a space that obviously that feels like one room was designed for one person and one was designed for the other. So in the end, it's always about balance.
What are some main points to address when designing a space that we can grow into for years to come? We don't want to have to do another project in 5 or 10 years.
Yeah, that one comes up for us. And we're often telling clients, you know, don't design for this moment in your history. Think about 5, 10 years from now. What are things going to be like? And having been doing this for over 20 years, I have a sense of that. And I have a sense of that for myself, having kids that are getting into their early teens. And, you know, thinking back on how I might have designed a space for a very young family. And so I think really I find that I take the experience I have working with a lot of different people in a lot of different phases of their life and helping them understand and talking them through that, first of all, the design process takes some time, then the build-out process takes some time, and that families run through these moments quickly. So you want to build for the architecture of the home, build towards the investment that you want to make, improve the space, and give as much function as you can for the number of years you plan on being in the space. Maybe you're only in that space till your kids finish high school. And so you can really focus on this exact moment that you're in. That's your idea of the investment. But if it's not that, and you're wanting to stay in the space all the way through grandkids, we kind of help people think about that process. And maybe you do want to go ahead and put in that pool, even though your kids are about to graduate from high school.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I always ask a lot of questions. If it's a young family, are you planning to have kids? Are you thinking about how many you might want? Of course, sometimes that you can't plan that. But, you know, usually asking those kinds of things, or if they already have kids, how much longer do you plan to stay here? And, you know, because then we're thinking, okay, if it's just a couple more years, then we want to look at it as, what do we want to do to the house if you want to sell it? If it's, we want to be here another 10 years, then okay, let's think about the other life stages you're going to go through and what things you might need.
Yeah, and I think also, no matter what, our goal is to protect the client's investment in their space and in their life in that space. And doing those two things at one time has us considering what somebody, no matter what, even if they're not planning on selling, what is right for the neighborhood, what is right for whoever might be in this house next, especially because we like to work on homes that have long lives. So I think just asking a lot of questions and asking people to really reflect on the changes that they've been through in their lives and thinking that through in a real way versus a knee-jerk reaction to what feels like the right thing at the moment. And I think that also folding into that, you know, paying attention to trends only so much as so that you can know when to ignore them, because there can be, you don't want to go too heavy-handed with what is in style in that very moment. So
right, yeah.
Helping balance that is important too.
Yeah, definitely that for the long term if you're planning to stay there a while. Thank you for listening to Design Oracles with Amity Worrell, owner of Amity Worrell & Company, and Diane Kett, owner of DK Studio, and together, partners at Amity Kett.